Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. I am your host, Nina Perez, and we are here to discuss life topics to challenge and transform your thinking. Let's do this. Today, I have Jan Rader here. Did I say that right, Jan? Is it Rader?
Yes, you did.
Awesome. Yes. Offers well-being and education and guidance. She believes that education empowers people to do their own personal work. So through trials and tribulations in her own life, she takes her experiences and research and helps people manage stress, be joyful, and be positive daily. And that's what we're here about, right? We are here to discuss what it means to take what we've been through to impact somebody's life, Jan. Now, we've had a great conversation right before we got started here. So before we get all into that, why don't you give us a little bit more about who you are, Jan?
I am a seasoned martial artist. I'm retired now, but I taught, trained for about almost 35 years and taught for about 30 years, ran a business. You know, I not only did I teach martial arts, but I also ran the business end of the martial arts, decided to go back to school and get a degree. Actually, I wound up getting 2 degrees, a bachelor's and a master's related to well-being, and really wanted to teach people that wanted to become wellness coaches, because I really didn't necessarily want to be a coach, because, you know, I get frustrated easily with people as they give up on themselves. So right. I tend to be a, like I call myself, am an acquired taste when it comes mm-hmm. to things like that, because I'll hold your feet to the fire, and I'm not necessarily, it's not necessarily what everybody wants, but anyway, so I decided to, you know, try to educate people. So that way, you know, you can be responsible. Here's the information. You can decide to do whatever it is you're going to do with it. And, you know, I know that if you apply things that I share with you, you're going to have make a difference in your life. So that's kind of, I guess, the long and the short of it, if you will.
So, I mean, I think that being a martial artist really does kind of give you that discipline too, right? That's probably where you go, you know, I don't want people giving up on themselves, because in martial arts, at least the people I've known that really take martial arts very seriously, it's who they are, right? They don't play games. It's like, No. Yeah, it's almost like military, right? Like Yes. You got to get this done. We're not going to be kidding around. Why are you not giving it 100%, right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that has a lot to do with your personality?
Oh, yeah. Well, if you think about and when I say martial arts, I want to clarify, because this is a pet peeve of mine, that, you know, there are many different types of martial arts. Mm-hmm. I'm not involved in Taekwondo, which is one that is sort of everywhere. And they like to use the word karate, and karate is Japanese and Okinawan, and Taekwondo is Korean. So, Okay. You know, it's completely different type of art. Japanese Okinawan arts are, you know, very much 50-50 hands and feet. They tend to be, if you think about the Japanese end of it, they tend to be very violent, very vicious. The Okinawan end is not as, but, and when you think about the word martial, it is militant. So right. Yeah, okay. You're absolutely mm-hmm. correct. And they, you know, in Japan, they taught the art in school, you know, going back to the early 1900s, they taught it in school to prep children for military service. So that is, you're absolutely right. You know, you get your self-discipline. I mean, it starts with discipline first from mm-hmm. your instructor, but then it becomes something you adopt yourself, because you just are driven to achieve your goal. You're not, you know, like you said, I really like what you said, I'm not here to mess around. So right. That's true.
Right. But, now, did you, was it something like you fell in love with as soon as you tried it? Was it something you've been doing? Yeah.
Right. Immediately. Because I've always been, I've always been a physically active person. When I was in school, I was a gymnast, but I was getting injured all the time. I was getting, you know, sprained ankles and whatnot. And I was never a person that enjoyed team sports. I just, I'm believe it or not, which I think some people have a hard time believing, I am an introvert, and I'm not really hot up on team sports, which I used to tell the parents of my junior students, you know, it's great to have martial arts as a foundation for your kid, because they get a sense of themselves before they get into a team sport. Plus, mm-hmm. when you're a martial artist, you're part of a team, you're part of the group that's in the class. But if you make a mistake, you're not quote letting the whole team down. And oh my gosh, we lost the game because, you know, you didn't catch the ball. So,
right.
So it's a way to have a connection and have a tremendous camaraderie with other people, but it's not teetering on your performance, if you will. So, I remember taking my very first intro class. There were 6 intros at the school that I eventually ran for the business wise. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I have to go 5 more, do I have to be like Bruce Lee or something? I'm probably dating myself to some people that are listening to this.
I love Bruce Lee.
I never watched a class. I just took the class because a friend of mine, I had a conversation. He was in a different art and I kept asking him questions. Oh, well, if this happened, what would you do for this? And this, you know, so I didn't even realize I had a passion for it, a desire mm-hmm. for it, curiosity. And then I met somebody that said, oh, this school is really good. So I went over there, I took the class. And then I was like, oh, I better watch a class before I, you know, join. And so I did, because I was like really nervous. And I went, okay. No, these people aren't perfect. I'm a perfectionist. So I was like, I can do this. So I started, and it was literally like I came home. Like I had found my home. I had found my people and I had found my home. And from that day on, it was like a snowball effect, if you will. And I have a national gold medal. I competed. I did like probably 6 classes a week. You know, I mean, I did all this crazy kind of training. So I was bit by the bug.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was probably really helpful too that you had some discipline already developed too, being a gymnast, right? So yeah, you had some of that discipline, so which is great. So tell me how the wellness education that you went to school for and all that, and the martial arts, how are you using that to impact people's lives?
Well, you know, it's very interesting that when the layman thinks about martial arts, you always think about the violent part of it, you know, that it's kicking and punching. I hate to break this to everybody, but it's not what you see in the movies, because that's all choreographed.
Really? Dang it.
Yeah. It's all choreographed and staged and, you know, and so on. But it really is a vehicle for self-discovery. And it is, you know, when you, because I also have quite a bit of knowledge on the historical part of martial arts, because it is, you know, very old. It's an extremely old art. It's not a sport. And you have to become, you actually have to understand healing, and you have to understand well-being for to be able to continue in the art itself. So, you know, like when you think about samurais and battles at the time, they had to understand not only the killing aspects of it, but also the healing aspects of the art. Mm-hmm. So there's you have to have a lot of knowledge of traditional Chinese medicine, which of course deals with the healing and so on. So it just was a natural progression that when I decided to go back to school, because that was a goal of mine to get a degree, that, you know, one of the professors that I was working with was like, oh, well, have you ever thought about being a health coach? And I was like, no, because I went back to school in 2013, and this was really, we were just kind of coming into, you know, the healthcare system that we find ourselves in now, where, you know, and even in the HMOs, where like a doctor gives you a diagnosis and they go, well, thanks a lot. Have a nice day. You know, good luck with that. And they don't have time. Not that they don't have the knowledge to assist you, but they don't necessarily have the time to sit there and quote, coach you and help you and gain an understanding. And I think, when I did go back to school, I actually took a course. One of the courses I took in my graduate studies that I thought was interesting was, you know, just sort of understanding the history of the medical practice and the doctor-patient relationship, you know, going back to, you know, the Renaissance period. So, you know, it's kind of like where this white coat syndrome comes from. You know, people just sort of lose their own voice when they're in front of the doctor.
There was a name for that, but that is true.
Right. And I certainly don't disagree that, you know, that your doctor doesn't know more than you because they've gone to, you know, 8 years of medical school and then they've gone through a residency and so on and so forth. But in certain, you know, in certain areas, they don't. Like I found out, which was really interesting because nutrition is a big area of mine that I have a passion for is, I'm going to make this statement, but things have changed slightly now, but doctors only get 9 hours of nutrition education. Okay. And, you know, that old adage of we are what we eat. You're in the food business. You know what I'm talking about. You are what you eat. I mean, I just looked at an interesting statistic today that, you know, 45% of cancers are diagnosed with cancer diagnoses because of their lifestyle choices. And what they eat is one of those foundational pieces of that. So, you know, I'm a firm believer in having a voice. And, you know, I think a lot of times you have to find the right doctor that is not intimidated by you having a voice, and that there's a way to talk to your doctor. There's a way to kind of collaborate with your doctor instead of just, you know, having the white coat syndrome of, you know, I talked to a woman a few weeks ago and she was like, oh, my doctor said this, my doctor said that, my doctor. And I'm like, okay. When was the last time they like went to a seminar on something, you know? So I kind of had this trajectory from understanding some of your own, the importance of putting your own self first, meaning I have to take care of, this is it. I have one body. That's it. I'm not getting another one. But at the same time, I have to be vigilant with what I do to it and what I put in it and how I move it. And I think that from the discipline aspect of the martial arts, it's a big deal to make a lifestyle change. You know, like if you have been tooling along in your life till you reach your maybe mid 40s to late 40s, which by the way, I'm well over 50 now. I'm headed towards 60. You're just going along about your business. And then all of a sudden you get a diagnosis and then you go, oh my gosh, what do I do now?
Yep.
And it takes a tremendous amount of discipline to change what you are doing.
It sure
to
does.
To alter. And that's the main reason people fail is because they want to change, but one, they don't have tools to actually help them step by step, you know, make those changes.
Right.
Or two, they don't know how to tap into the fire and the desire to make those changes. Do you know what I mean? Yep. Because we keep getting pulled back. You keep getting pulled back.
It's habits, right? Our old patterns and old habits that are ingrained in our brain that we have to basically take it down and re-upload something new. It's
absolutely you have to tear down the old scaffolding and you got to put up new stuff, but that's a tremendous amount of work.
It sure is.
And people hate change. I was reading a book the other day. It's actually a business book. And it's called Gap Selling. If anybody's out there that's selling things, it's a great book. And it's understanding the gap between what you have, what people need, whatever. But one of the things that the author said that was really stood out to me is that people will only change if what their current situation is so awful now that they want to get to the other end of it, whatever that is, whatever the gap is, they want to get through the gap, but they are willing to go through the pain that they're going to have to go through to get through the gap, to get through the change. So that the change, what's happening now, your status quo now is so uncomfortable and so awful that you don't mind going through the pain of changing.
Right.
So, and if you think about that,
that's so true.
It's painful to change.
It is. It's and painful in a lot of ways, right? I mean, and it's also inconvenient.
Absolutely. Right?
Because nothing is going to be the same. Like you don't have, the same habitual patterns that we all have.
Right.
You know, you have to like break the cycles and break addictions and break habits.
Right.
And to your point, Jan, I mean, that is a very hard thing to do. And that's why, having somebody who leads you, whether it's a mentor or coach or somebody in your life, is super important, right? I mean, it's the same thing with just using your martial art as an example, right? You can, if you're not there all the time, taking your classes, doing what you have to do, learning step by step what you have to do, you're not going to learn martial arts. You're just going to learn, to do it half-assed, and then you're not going to do it right.
Right,
it's the same way, right? I mean, this, the story you were saying is my story, right? Going along, working your butt off all the time, and not taking care of yourself, then you hit your 40s and you're like, oh crap.
Right.
Oh crap. Things just got really serious. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Things got real for me real quick. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's, it really is something that, you have to have those aha moments, that long, hard look in the mirror, but at the same time, people don't necessarily want to do, like, you don't want to actually believe, if you will, that this is happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that, that's one of the things when I, like at first when we were talking before you officially started, I was saying about when you're an athlete and then all of a sudden you can't be who you are, it's not do what you were doing, because it really isn't just about an activity. It's about an actual activity. Who you are. If you can't be who you are, and that person is literally like dead, you're grieving that person. So that's the same type of thing as, I'm in my 20s and everything's all good. Let's say if I'm having an issue with my weight, I'll just cut down my calories and bang, 6 weeks later, I'm back at the weight I, was at before. Well, fast forward, now you're in your 40s. It doesn't happen that way. It doesn't go that way. Plus the added thing of, if I've gone up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down between my 20s and my 40s, I've just made it even harder for myself in my 40s. I mean, that's me. I mean, I struggled with my weight my whole entire life. So, I did, now my yo-yo dieting, my yo-yo weight because I don't like that word yo-yo dieting, but anyway, my yo-yo weighting, whatever weight I was, went up and down. It was like, it would go up and down over the course of several years. So it wasn't like that, that story they tell you that, if you lose X amount of weight, you're going to gain back double that, you're going to gain that weight back and the other. That wasn't me. I would lose the weight and then it would slowly creep back on over the course of a couple of years. And I rarely went way above what I was before. But that was my other tribulation that happened to me, is not only did I go into menopause, I was premenopausal, then I was menopausal, Then I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, which for those of you that are listening, it's a thyroid disorder. It's hypothyroidism, not hyper. So your thyroid is an organ that pretty much controls your entire body. It's like right here, that little butterfly thing that's at the center of your throat that controls pretty much everything. And when that's screwed up, you got some problems. So, you know, I had these things going against me. So when I talk about what you do in your 20s is totally different than what you can do later in life. So you have to then switch the way you think about things, like what we just said. I can't just tool along with what I've been doing. I now have to take 10 steps back, regroup, and go, okay, what am I going to do now?
Right.
And I have to completely change my strategy. I'm not one of those people, you know, and I know people like that. My people I'm related to are actually like this, where they just give up. They just go, okay, fine, whatever. This is the way I am. I'm going to be this way. I'm going to have, you know, 10 hot fudge sundaes if I want, because I care, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you get fatigued. That's what it is, right?
Of course. Yeah. I completely, completely understand it. But at the same time, for me, I'm a fighter. I mean, when I used to teach students how to spar in martial arts, I used to think to myself, well, okay, I kind of counted up the number of rounds I probably fought. I probably fought 20,000 rounds, maybe, in my time of fighting. And what is it? Malcolm Gladwell says, you know, 10,000 hours of something make you like an expert at that. I mean, I certainly wouldn't call myself an expert at sparring, but I'm a fighter. I'm not laying down. I mean, I'm not giving up. But at the same time, you have to change your strategy. You can't just go, okay, well, I'm going to take away bread and I'm going to drop 30 pounds in a month.
Right. You know? You could when you were 20. Definitely not happening right now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. When you're younger, it's like that. So getting back to what we said, you know, what you mentioned about these habits, and I don't necessarily like to call them habits. I like to call them our realities. These are the realities that I'm having right now. This is my reality when I'm in my 20s. And when I'm in my 20s, I don't know what my reality is going to be when I'm in my 40s.
Right.
I mean, I can see it in other people. Like, I used to tell my junior students in martial arts all the time. I used to go, you know how you can be completely different than any of your peers as you grow, as you get into junior high and high school? If you want to know how you can be completely different, I want you to listen up. And of course, they're always like, you know, well, what is it? Like, I'm going to do some big secret. And I go, listen to people that are older than you and heed their advice.
Yep.
And that, my friend, will make you completely different than any other teenager that has ever lived on the planet. I was one of those people. I thought I knew everything, you know?
Yep. And they do too.
Right. Right. had I listened, I might, you know, my whole existence might have turned out differently. But it's a matter of, one, you know, coming from a place of understanding for yourself, but not understanding and love. Cause I really have a problem when people go, oh, well, I love myself. And I'm like, okay, yes. But if I had fairy dust that I could sprinkle over you and you could be whatever way you dream of being,
right,
I'm going to guarantee you're probably not going to choose the way you are right now. Mm. The majority of people want to be different. They want be thinner, taller, quote, prettier. I want less wrinkles or whatever it is.
Right.
And so it's a matter of, I do love myself. I respect myself. I care about myself. But I also have to understand that sometimes when I decide to respect and care and love myself, I can't have the 12 hot fudge sundaes because right. that's not honoring, right. loving, and respecting myself and yeah. taking care of myself. It's not.
I agree with that, Jan. I also agree that in that place, you also have to be honest with yourself. And
absolutely.
You know, you can't just cover things up with, I love myself, but not look at the reality of what things are. At least yes. That's just the way my brain works. You know, yep. I have another platform, which I'm merging into Straight Talk, and it's called Memoirs of a Fat Girl. And mm-hmm. I remember when I came out with it, because it's my weight and health journey, what I'm going through right now in my life. And mm-hmm. Somebody said, fat, like P-H-A-T. I'm like, no, like F-A-T. They're like, you use the word fat. I'm like, right. yes. Yeah. I remember my friend, I've said this before. My friend says, but you're not fat. You're big boned. I said, I'm not trying to lose bones. I'm trying to lose fat. Okay.
Right. Right.
Let's just call it what it is. Why do we keep doing that? You know? Right. And they're like, oh, okay. But it's like, you know, it's not fat shaming. I'm not putting myself down or putting anybody down. I look at things for what they are.
Right.
Let me deal with them and move on. You know, exactly. So I agree with you.
Right. Well, and if, like, as I mentioned earlier about that 45% of cancers are coming from lifestyle choices, obesity is number one with that. So, you know, that's what I was saying about the magic fairy dust over there. I mean, you can sprinkle it. I'm the same. If I could sprinkle that magic fairy dust over myself too, I would look like I did, you know, 14 years ago. I'd want to be that weight I was 14 years ago. So it's not a sense. And I will qualify by saying you can never get there if you hate yourself. You can never get there. Nothing will happen if you are doing it from a place of hating yourself.
That's so true.
So you have to find the balance of, I love myself, but I'm not going to fall prey to, oh, you can have that bag of chips because I love myself. You know, I can't. And I didn't really.
And actually, that's not even a loving act to yourself.
It's not.
But we think it is. So we use that as a comfort tool. And I know because I'm getting out of that habit myself, right? Or that those patterns, self-sabotaging patterns, you know?
Right. And that's
I agree.
That's one of those things that, you know, and I didn't necessarily plan on this going where it's going right now, but it's one of those health issues that happens. It's the same thing with, like, let's switch gears and go physical exercise. And when you're talking about somebody holding your feet to the fire over it, I mean, we all know now, I'm not saying anything that anybody doesn't already know. You should be moving at least 30 minutes a day. Our bodies are designed to move. They're not designed to be sedentary. That is not how they were, you know, we were made up to do that. And people know that. And they don't do it. It may not be that, oh, well, I love myself, so I'm going to sit here and watch a movie and eat a, you know, pint of ice cream.
I mean, we're loving ourselves to death is what we're doing.
We're loving
ourselves to death because you're right. I mean, it's become a thing where going to work out is a chore. You know, eating healthy is not even an option. If you have a salad in front of you or fast food or cake, you go for the fast food.
Right.
So we're loving ourselves to death, literally.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. But that's one of those things. I was just talking to a gentleman the other day and he, you know, we had this conversation about, you know, one of the questions I asked him, because when I work with people, I have, as I did for you, I have a little profiler that just, you know, in really short questions, just kind of gives you a minute to kind of look at it and go, what do I need to change? I need to change some things.
Like, and one of the questions, Jan, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but one of your questions was, do you move 30 minutes a day? And my answer was no. And when I saw my assessment come back, I said, well, this is going to change. So I did.
Oh, good.
So I'm walking, I walk in the mornings and then I work out in the evenings, whether it's yoga, stretching, or actually I do boot camp 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, I just did an athletic conditioning class. I want to get back into martial arts. I did karate for like almost a year and a half and I loved it.
Good,
you know, it was something I really loved. And being obese is a challenge because it's also here, right? Mm-hmm. So it's also like, well, I can't go back to martial arts. I'm too overweight now. And I can't do this because I'm too, you know, overweight to do that. I did an athletic class. I can't do an athletic class. I'm not an athlete, but I went anyway.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So
yep.
That's really good, Jen, that you do that.
It is out of, you know, you're absolutely right. What you said earlier about getting out of your own way. It really is. I mean, I'll tell a little quick story about a student we had at the karate school, and she weighed, I think 400 and some pounds when she started training. And she just wanted to take private classes because she was too embarrassed to be in a group class. And she came in her first day, she came in with a bag from McDonald's that had two Big Macs and a large fry in it. And she was like, I gotta eat something before I work out. And we're like, you're not eating that. So she decided to go all in with training. And we monitored her diet. We helped her work. She wound up losing, I think it was like 280 pounds.
Wow.
And I mean, over a course of amount of time, she was, she was actually an RN, and she wound up, she had a dream of becoming a physician's assistant. So she went back to school. She became a physician's assistant. She trained and she kept that weight off. So it was a matter of, like I said earlier, the amount of pain that she was going to have to go through was worth it to get to the other side.
Yeah.
And I think when you have somebody that you feel comfortable with pushing you, and that's another part about, like, I've been kind of doing sort of this dissecting things from the martial arts, like what I learned from the martial arts, you know, I've been kind of writing things down. And one of the things that, when I mentioned earlier about sparring, you know, that I fought all these rounds, one of the things that it teaches you is it teaches you not to take things personal. Because when I'm like, if you and I were standing, you trained for a year and a half. I'm not sure if you got to sparring at all when you trained, because it depends on the school that you go to. For us, you had to train for at least a year before you wound up sparring with anyone. But anyway, when you're standing in front of somebody else, like if you and I were going to spar together, I don't know what happened to you today. You don't know what happened to me today.
Right.
So once technique starts flying and we start hitting each other and whatever, and I don't know, you know, maybe you're angry about something or what have you, maybe you hit me a little bit hard. Well, I can't assume that I know what's going on in your head. So through that activity, I learn how to not take things personally, because it's just air between the two of us. And I only can control what I think about from my own perspective. I can't put on you I think you're thinking.
That's
so
good.
The minute that I start, you know how like you meet somebody and they go somewhere and they go, oh, well, that woman or that receptionist or that cashier, they were such a, you know, they were so nasty.
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Well, that's you putting something on them that you have no idea. You don't know what happened to them before they interacted with you. And what does it matter to you anyway? You know, are you taking it so personal? So when you learn to kind of almost detach a little bit from that and kind of not take it personal, when somebody is there giving you feedback, giving you, you know, most people don't like the word criticism, you know, giving you feedback, then instead of it taking it personal, you decide to go, okay, I'm having this reality moment with myself. I'm being real. I'm using the word fat, F-A-T, you know what I mean? Like whatever it is you're doing for yourself, and you're going, and this person is trying to help me. They're not, you know, saying I'm a terrible, I never once said to this woman who brought in the bag of McDonald's food, oh, you are a terrible person because you brought that in here.
Right.
I just went, you know, that is not going to get you to that goal. If you want to get, if you want to become a martial artist and lose a bunch of weight, you're not going to get there by eating that.
That's right.
You're just not.
That's right.
It's a reality. So it's nothing personal. I didn't say you're a terrible
person. But you know, she had to make that. She had to make that decision, and she did. And 280 pounds later, it showed that her making that decision is what really saved her life, because at the rate that she was going, she would have probably died from obesity. So I see that you do love, and that's what I liked about even our first conversation. Like, you're really, really good about giving us the information that we need. And I like that little assessment too. That was really good. And I appreciate the email that you sent me afterwards, because I did watch the YouTube that you sent me about fear. I did read the article, all of that. So, you know, that was very helpful. So before I wrap up, I really do want my audience to know where they can, you know, get in contact with you and follow you, and also get this amazing information as well, because this is just a little bit of what you do, you know. Well, so
the best way right now, because I'm kind of in transition with my branding, you know, that personal branding.
Yeah.
The best way to get a hold of me actually is through LinkedIn. I, you know, on LinkedIn, people can message me there.
It's just under Jan Rader, right?
Yep. The other part, since we, you know, we spend a lot of time on the physical part of ourselves, I really have a passion also for the mental and spiritual part of, you know, of well-being. So like when I sent you that information, you know, the difference between wellness and well-being is, you know, is more of your psychological, spiritual, emotional, and then, you know, your physical is more toward the wellness end of things. And the two are important for each other, because
they really are. You need them both.
Yeah. Physically, you feel better, then emotionally, you're going to feel better. Emotionally, you feel better, you're going to work on, you know, caring about yourself physically. But I like to break things down into theoretical practices, because I think, you know, when people understand the scaffolding of what holds us all up, it helps you to kind of take this huge abstraction of, oh my gosh, I feel terrible, or I just feel like I'm stuck, which there's a term in psychology, positive psychology, for that. It's called languishing, where you're just kind of going through the motions. Mm-hmm. And it's not depression, and it's not, you know, not depression. It just, you're kind of baseline. So you want to go above baseline. And, you know, part of what helps is to understand that there are actual tested practices and little things that you can do that can make a difference in your daily life on feeling better. It's kind of like, if you work out 30 minutes a day, physically, you're going to feel better. And, you know, getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep is going to make you feel better. If you're eating more fruits and vegetables and less animal products, you're going to feel better. You know, all of these types of things. Mm-hmm. But there's also things that you can do from the emotional, spiritual side of things too. So, and when I say spiritual, I'm not talking about religion. I'm just talking about finding meaning for yourself and things like that. So, you know, I really like to have conversations with people and give them some direction that they can decide what to do with it. And by the way, if there's other things that you want to know more about, I would love to give you more information, because there's so much out there, you know.
There is. Thank you. And yes, and you are like a wealth of knowledge. So I really am excited about people connecting with you as well. And I'm glad that we connected as well. I think we connected through LinkedIn as well. And I love your message. And I love what, you know, I love what you do. I love the little survey that you sent, because it really did make you think. And that's what, you know, when I read that, I was like, oh shoot, I don't do 30 minutes a day. I really need to, even though, like, you kind of know, right? You kind of know you're supposed to, but when you're looking at it on paper, you're like, okay.
Right.
Yeah, this doesn't look good. Next time I'm saying yes to this question.
That's right. Well, you go like this. Everybody knows what you've got to do, but you just need to have a roadmap to do that. And you need to have somebody that says, like you said, using that word that nobody likes to use right now.
Right.
And the reason they don't like to use it is because they've attached emotions to it. Like, I'm somehow bad. And, you know, here's another, just a little piece of information that I like to use myself, is that, you know, how everybody's always afraid of their scale. Like, oh my God, I don't want to get on the scale. If you put notes all over for yourself, and this is the note that you put everywhere, your weight is just a data point. All it is data, so that you know where I'm at now and where I need to be, or where I want to be, you know? Right. So it doesn't judge me. It doesn't define me. It doesn't, it's a piece of data.
Right.
That's it.
That's so good.
And the other little scientific piece of information, always weigh yourself on Wednesday. That's the best day to weigh yourself is on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
There's been several studies that have been done that's the best day to weigh yourself. First thing in the morning, after you've gone to the bathroom, don't eat anything. Don't do any working out because, you know, that's going to give you your best idea of what it is. And do it once a week.
That's good to know.
Yeah, okay. Do it once a week.
That is
once
good to know.
Yeah, because you fluctuate so much. So once a week, and it's put that on your scale. Nina, I want you to have that note on your scale that says, your weight is just a data point.
Yeah.
It's just a data point. So I hope
Dan, you're the best. You did. This was great.
I hope you enjoyed it. It was so fun. I really appreciate that you wanted to include me in this. And we didn't even get into the grief of athletes, and we could do that another time,
we sure can. We really can, Jan. I would love to have you back on. Yeah
that's really
it is important.
Important.
It is important. It is important. And, you know, the grieving process of that is very important to talk about too, because I do have a lot of athletes that I interview.
Yeah.
And they talk about that, how they really lost a sense of self when they lost, you know, whether they tore an Achilles or whatever they, you know, whatever happened, that you're just like, that was hard for them. So I'd love to touch on that on the next one. Absolutely.
Yeah. When we talk about that, we'll break down, you know, we'll break down the grief, you know, because everybody knows all the stages of grief, and they do apply to anyone that has had a life change. And it doesn't only just apply to athletes. I mean, it can apply in other regards too. So,
Next time we talk, I'd like to touch on that and the spiritual aspect of what it is that you guide people with and teach them. That'd be great.
Yeah. Great. Good. Thanks, Nina. Have a fabulous weekend.
You too. And guys, don't forget to follow Jan. I'm going to make sure that I link everything below so that you can go ahead and follow all of our information. I will put the show notes in there so you can read what we talked about. Please go ahead and contact her because it was great. I contacted her and she immediately sent me a little survey. I took that survey. It was an eye opener. And then she sent amazing information. It was just a great experience. And I want you to have that same experience. So don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Make sure that you share away and leave a comment and a review. That helps us grow. And I will see you very, very soon with another episode. This is Nina Perez. This is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Until next time. Make sure that you visit our website at Straight Talk, No Sugar Added, where you can subscribe to our show on iTunes and Stitcher or anywhere you listen to your podcast or on YouTube, so you'll never miss a show. And while you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about our show, that would be awesome too. If you like this show, you might want to check out our book as well. It's Hit Me With Your Best Shot, How I Overcame a Hard-Hitting Life. I am Nina Perez, and I am here for you. If you are looking for private coaching, make sure that you email me at hello@straighttalknosugaraddit.com. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.